On today's show, I'm joined by the amazing Pete Hall. He's an author, former principal, and now he coaches and mentors. He still writes, does conference, keynote speeches. This guy is filled with a ton of wisdom. You're going to learn a lot. What are you focused on? That's a key question he'll have us explore. And one of the big takeaways for me is, how do you maintain relationships with people that are different than you and have differing points of view? I never take it for granted that you tune into the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Thanks again.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
All right, well, Better Leaders, I am so excited to be joined by Pete Hall today. He's a professional development agent, 12-year veteran school principal on sabbatical, and he proudly offers professional development experiences, workshops, mentoring support, keynote addresses, and other educational consulting services full-time. After a teaching career that spanned three states, including primary, intermediate, and middle school positions, Mr. Hall served as a principal of Anderson Elementary School in Reno, Nevada. When he took over Anderson Elementary in 2002, it was the only school in Nevada that had failed to make AYP for four consecutive years. 2 short years later, it was the only Title I school in the state of Nevada to earn high-achieving designation. Subsequently, he served as a principal of Sheridan Elementary, a Title I school in Spokane, which earned accolades from the Washington State Office of the Superintendent for its growth and achievement, and as a principal of Shaw Middle, another Title I school in Spokane, which earned recognition for its college and career readiness indicators and growth. Pete, let me welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm glad to be here.
So, you know, I lived in Illinois for quite a while. Some people say Illinois, and that's really wrong. And I want to know, how was my pronunciation? Is Nevada correct? Or is it, you know, did I do that right? Spokane? Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce these. Tell me, you live there. How did I do?
Well, that's one of those, one of those funny things. If you live in Nevada, it's pronounced Nevada. Everywhere else in the world, it's Nevada. And as far as that city in Washington is concerned, Spokane. It's pronounced Spokane. You did pretty well.
So I was 50%. I failed. But I have a growth mindset, so it's just I haven't learned to pronounce them yet. I'm going to be okay.
That's right. You're on your road.
So, Pete, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, you know, I was never going to be an educator. I was going to be the shortstop for the Boston Red Sox. I mean, what kid didn't have that dream, right?
So, right.
At some point, though, that kind of fell apart, and I got into coaching. So as I was coaching youth league sports, basketball, baseball, and whatnot, I realized what an impact I could have on other lives. And so as a result, I was kind of ushered into the direction of education. So I got into teaching, and I never, ever wanted to be a principal. That was the farthest thing from my mind. And wouldn't you know it, a couple years into teaching, folks were starting to recommend, hey, you should consider being an administrator. And well, the rest is history, as you just read for us.
Were those your teaching peers, the administrators at the school, district level administrators, a combination of all of the above?
Kind of a combination of all of the above. It started with my teaching peers who noticed the leadership capabilities that I guess I had. So they kind of pushed me in that direction to start. And then folks at district level and at the administrators in my building also saw some of that leadership capacity or ability. So I guess it was kind of everyone just kind of pushed me in that direction.
So I know that teaching is leadership, definitely. But then you transitioned into this role where you had the title of leader as well of a building. And so how would you describe your leadership style, and how did you develop it?
We know there's a lot of different leadership styles out there. And I think the one that I've kind of embraced is being a capacity builder. That is my ultimate responsibility as a leader in a school or just in education in general. And in the work that I do now, providing professional development to schools and leadership teams all across the country, my job is to build capacity. So whether I'm working with administrators and building leadership capacity, if I'm working with teachers to build their teacher leadership capacity, or if I'm working with teachers to build their capacity as classroom instructors, working directly with kids to build their capacity as learners for their future, whatever context it is, whomever I'm working with, my responsibility is to build their capacity. So I consider myself a capacity builder as opposed to, you know, instructional leader or a leader of learning or whatnot. I really do consider myself a capacity builder.
Pete, as we're recording this, I'm in my first year as a principal. It's an exciting job. Yeah.
Hey, good luck. Welcome to the forest.
Thank you. Serving an incredible school in Houston. I had the best students, an incredible staff, a really engaged and knowledgeable parent and community group as well. So I'm very blessed to be where I'm at. I was reading a book by John Maxwell recently, Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. Told a story about Coach Wooden, and the question he asked really rocked me as a leader. And it asked, you know, how are you making your team better? I need to give myself permission because at the time of this recording, I'm about 2 months in. There's so much to learn, you know, about the school, about leadership, et cetera. But I realized I'm not doing enough. I'm not really doing much of anything making my specifically APs better. This is my long way of saying, how did you used to utilize your leadership team? How did you make them better? Or connecting to this idea of building capacity in the work that you do now serving school leaders, how do you help us understand how to build that capacity in others?
Sure. That's a really good question. And I commend you on your work as a first-year principal in tackling those immense responsibilities that you've got at the building level, and doing it all for the first time must seem quite daunting, as I recall.
And a little bit.
Yeah. And just so you know, Daniel, it doesn't get any easier. You know, 10, 11, 12 years down the road, you're still going to feel like a first year principal to a certain regard because so much changes, you know, changes the name of the business in education. Mm. So to get back to your question about how we build leadership capacity, it all starts with identifying a vision or a goal for what you would like the work to look like. So I might, as principal, have an idea of what I would like my administrative team to accomplish, or how I'd like it to function, or what I think certain leaders within my team should be able to lead, what they should be able to tackle themselves. And once we have that identified, those goals, that mission, then everything we do is kind of built to lead to that place. So there's a gradual release of responsibility model that we would, you know, implement as we work with our administrators. So I may have an initiative in which we're, you know, launching standards-based grading, for instance. And I have an assistant principal that is particularly really interested in that. And she's got some skills and she really wants to lead that. Well, she and I would sit down and figure out, well, we'd kind of map out what the next year, 2 years might look like as far as how she would lead committee work, what kind of professional development she would provide, what kind of guidance and support I could offer and provide for her, where she might go for additional support and guidance. And we would then kind of implement that plan, and along the way, you know, gauge whether or not it's working, whether or not she's growing in her leadership capacity, if folks in the staff are coming to her for questions as opposed to coming to me or to somebody else. And we adapt and adjust along the course of this path. And little by little, wouldn't you know it, we're building capacity in that person over the course of those years. So, you know, something like that for each person within your leadership team. And again, it starts with identifying the goal or the vision or the mission of what you'd like it to look like, what you'd like to accomplish over X amount of months or years.
What I love about that, you know, there's some simplicity in the answer, but also a level of depth. And I've used gradual release responsibility in my classroom. We used it in the former school where I served.
Sure.
And it's these helpful reminders. So I want to thank you, you know, for that reminder, Pete. It's like you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You know things that work for kids and adults. And it's just right. Like going back to those basics at times. And, you know, again, getting clear on your mission, vision, values, goals, and then having everything filter through that lens. So that is excellent. I really appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. And there's two things just to follow up on that from what you said. One is, there are a ton of parallels between what great teachers do in their classroom and what great principals do in the office, right, in a schoolhouse. So if you've learned good instructional techniques and good methods of managing your classroom and building relationships with kids, and then you can translate that very easily into your principalship. And then the second piece of that is, it may, you know, to a certain extent sound simplistic in some of these things, but the main idea there is that we're very strategic about what we want to accomplish. If you don't have a strategy, if you don't have a game plan, good luck accomplishing just about anything, right? In the principalship. So it's all about being strategic, identifying your targets and what you'd like to accomplish, and then working in a very focused way to accomplish them.
So Pete, I've asked you a couple of easy questions. I love digging into this one early into the interview, but you know, so we just met. But by the way, what was your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from it?
Oh man, I have a really, really good one. And I'll share it with you because I didn't actually make it. I was on the brink. I was right on the cusp of making a tragic mistake. So here we were. I was principal of Anderson Elementary School in Reno. And one of the things we wanted to do was to create an environment in which we were focused and everybody was on the same page and we were transforming the climate and the culture of the school and the community. So we were working with a consultant at the time. His name was Jim. And he said, why don't you come with me, bring a team to Kennewick, Washington. That's the home of the 90% reading goal. Come and visit a couple of those schools, bring a team, and let's see if that can't inform some of your team's work. I said, well, that's great. So we got all ready to go, and we flew up on the airplane. And the night before we went to start visiting the schools, I sat down with Jim over a glass of lemonade, and I brought out for him a 28-page bound, beautiful document. And he says, what's this? And I said,
what is it?
I said, this, my friend, is our school improvement plan. And he said, oh, good. Where did you get that? And I said, well, I just wrote this over the last 2 weeks or so. And, you know, at the moment, I was an extremely well-read educator. I knew about school improvement. I knew about the change process. I knew about the elements of effective schools that would create this environment in which kids would be successful, et cetera, et cetera. And I had written this plan and I had put it all together and I had taken it to Kinko's and I had it printed and bound, and he takes it from my hand and he throws it on the floor behind him. And I said, what are you doing? That was $27 worth of printing it costs at Kinko's. And he says, this is your plan. This is not your teacher's plan. What is your plan here? And I said, well, I actually have 10 copies, and I brought forward my wheelbarrow that had all the copies of the school improvement plan. And I put it on the table there, and I said,
yeah,
I'm going to give one to everybody that's here with us. They're going to read through the plan tomorrow morning before breakfast, and then we're going to go visit these schools, and they're going to see the things that I've written about, and they're going to be convinced that that's what we need to do, and we're going to come back, and we're going to do it. And he said, that's the worst idea I've ever heard. I said, what? He says, that's your plan, but that's not their plan. They need to create their plan. Let them visit the schools. Let them have the conversations and come back and brainstorm the ideas that are going to transform our school community. And I said, man, I don't know. You know, leave it to other people to make this magnificently important decision? Well, needless to say, that's exactly what we did. And over the course of the next 3 days, we had unbelievable conversations as a team in the car rides over to school and back and in the hallways after visiting classrooms at O'Henry's Go-Go Bar and over burgers and beer and whatnot. We came up with fantastic ideas. And when we came back and reported out to the staff and provided our suggestions and our ideas for the school improvement plan, guess who did all the talking? They did.
Not you.
Yeah. No, I didn't say a word. I sat back and I watched the whole thing with a big grin on my face thinking, man, am I glad that I took Jim's advice? That could have been just a costly mistake. And it turned, you know, the rest you read about, the school had magnificent success. And I won't tell you how much of the plan that the teachers came up with were in my original 28-page Kinko's printed document. But I can tell you that they did amazing work putting that thing together. And I was pleased as punch to have not made my worst leadership mistake.
Mm. Let's dig into the mindset, though. I mean, you said 2 weeks, and I'm sure long hours, those 2 weeks leading up to the creation and publication of your baby, the 28-page school improvement plan.
Right.
And it's wheelbarrow cousins. Now, to throw it out like that and to pivot and to say, okay, I'm going to hand over the reins. I'm going to give my staff autonomy for where we are going. I couldn't do that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had it in my mind and to make that shift, it sounded like you made it almost instantly. So can you share a little bit of your mindset of like why that worked? I don't know if it's your personality or other experiences you've had, or it just clicked, you know, but I'm just curious, how did you take that advice and implement it so easily, it sounds like?
Yeah, well, you know, I think there are two things about that. One is that there's trust, that I had trust in Jim and he'd given us good advice and he'd been walking me through some things as a leader. So I trusted that his feedback would be helpful. So when he said, no, throw that away, don't do anything with that. If he's given me good advice before, maybe he's given me good advice now. And the second piece of that is I was truly in kind of an unaware stage, to use language of the concept of self-reflection that I've written quite a bit about. I was in an unaware stage as a leader. I did not know what I didn't know at that point. And the precise feedback that I needed was for somebody to tell me what to do or what not to do and what to do instead. And so I was fortunate enough that I had somebody that was there for me, a mentor, who was able to give me that really good advice. And, you know, I've done a lot of work with, like I mentioned before, with athletic teams and with coaching and whatnot. And so I know the value of getting everybody on the same page. And that's what we were trying to do, was get everybody on the same page. And my strategy, as I looked at it, you know, over Lemonade, I realized my strategy was not the best strategy to get everybody on the same page. And the advice that I got from Jim was much better.
And the key point there for listeners too is just that importance of trust, you know, that Jim had built it with you. And so he could give you tough feedback and you could listen to it and make that type of decision to follow his guidance. Were there any things that he did specifically that helped build that trust, or how do you find yourself building trust with teachers when you were working as a building principal?
Well, I think there's two ways to do that. One is to build relationship, to have a positive professional relationship as best you can with every individual that you've got on staff. That's a big part of it. And then the second way to build trust, and really it's the kind of the keystone, I would say, is to say you're going to do something and then do it. And if you can do those two things, if you can build relationships with folks and then follow through with what you say you're going to do, then you're going to be a long ways down the road towards establishing a trusting relationship in your building.
Build relationships and execute on what you say you're going to do. That's great advice. You talked about, you know, this idea of being unaware and the concept of self-reflection. We were introduced through a mutual friend, and so I haven't engaged in all your books yet. I know that you're an author. You have a number of books. Is that concept connected to self-awareness? It kind of sounds like that.
It starts a little bit there with being self-aware, yes. What my co-author, Elisa Cimarol, and I have written about in a couple different books, and then we have a book particularly for principals. It's called The Principal Influence. It's for principals and those who supervise them. We have a team of authors on that one. There are five of us. Great folks. We've identified this reflective cycle, which really is a predictable pattern of thinking that we all go through as we develop our skills or we progress towards expertise in something. And it follows four pretty predictable steps. It starts with awareness. You have to be aware of something. So if you're going to go from not knowing about something to becoming an expert in something, in a skill or a hobby or something you're interested in, or learn a lot about something, you have to start by building some awareness about it. And then you have to take some intentional steps to get better. You don't accidentally become an expert in something. You become an expert as a result of a determined effort and focused thinking towards that skill. And then the third step in our reflective cycle is you assess your impact along the way. So you're thinking about whether or not you're getting better. You're thinking about, and you're deepening your thinking about that concept, that idea. And then the fourth step in our process is being able to be responsive as your needs change. So you adapt and adjust based on the results of those assessments. If it's working, you just keep doing it. If it's not working, you mix it up a little bit. So those are the kind of the big ideas of self-reflection that we've kind of woven into a couple of the books that we've written that really have had an immense impact on teacher effectiveness and instructional performance, learning outputs in schools and districts all across the country. So we're thrilled to death to have that work going.
You know, for the listeners too, we'll have all Pete's books linked up in the show notes. I highly encourage you to check them out. I know I will be doing that, and just click the link and you can get that from Amazon shipped to your house 2 days.
Well, I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And let's pause here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You know, I'm just like you. I'm a school leader that wants to get better every single day, and that's why I created a free gift for you called The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential. You can grab it today for free by texting the word UNLOCK NOW to 33444. That's UNLOCK NOW to 33444, and The 15 Questions to Unlock Your Leadership Potential will be delivered straight to your inbox. And now back to our show.
Pete, what have you learned about yourself, I guess, like becoming an author? Something, you know, that I find fascinating about you, and, you know, how'd you even get into it?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've always been a journaler. I've kept a journal for years and years and years, and there were times that I was really faithful about writing in my journal on a regular basis. And so I've always had kind of an inkling towards writing. I've really enjoyed writing. I love the English language, and I love going after it. And during my first year as a principal, I actually kept a journal about that first year, and I recorded my thoughts, I recorded the events, and I recorded what was going on. And at pretty much at the end of my first year, I thought, well, I have some, there's some pretty good ideas in here. I mean, maybe somebody would be interested in that. So I kind of compiled some of those ideas, and I wrote a book that's called The First Year Principal. And I cold sent copies, 100-page, you know, print copies to a couple different publishers. Most of them ignored me. One of them very kindly wrote back and said, you know, we won't do this, but one of these four publishers might do it, and gave me four new names. So I sent four more copies out, and one of them took it, and there it is. It was out there, the first book. And once the first book was published, I enjoy writing. I figure if you have a compelling idea and a voice that's worth listening to, then you can write. And I think that over the course of my career, I have been fortunate enough to work with some great people, and I've stumbled upon some compelling ideas. And now I've been able to share those with my love of writing, with these compelling ideas. And so now I've got, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 books out there that, and a couple of them are actually pretty good.
Which one are you the most proud of?
I am really, really proud of a book called Fostering Resilient Learners. And it's a book that I co-authored with Kristen Sowers. She's a licensed mental health therapist that I had work with the teaching staffs at the two schools that I was principal in Spokane. And it is about creating a trauma-sensitive classroom environment. And how we do that. And the reason that I'm most proud of it, because A, it's really, really good stuff. And 99% of the ideas in the book are Kristen's ideas, told with a little bit of my voice. I'm really, really excited about it because there really aren't a lot of books out there for educators about how to establish a trauma-sensitive classroom environment. And this is it's a pioneer book. It's on the forefront of it. And the response from educators has been outstanding. A day doesn't go by that one or the both of us receives an email or doesn't receive an email from a teacher, an educator, a counselor, an administrator, somebody somewhere who said, I read this book and it totally touched me. This is exactly what we need. So thrilled. Thank you so much for sharing these strategies. So I'm thrilled to death to have that book out there. And at some point in the next 6 months or so, around May, a new book that Elisa Simmerall and I are writing is coming out tentatively, is titled Creating a System of Reflective Practice. So that's one that's coming out, and that is going to be a comprehensive look at creating an environment in which thinking rules the day. So that one's exciting, and I'm very excited to have that one come out.
A few more questions about being an author, and then they may seem weird, but you know, I'm going to ask them still. So your journal, is that on a computer, a tablet? Is that in a Moleskine notebook, a spiral notebook? What do you use to write? Is it a pencil? Is it a pen? Do you have favorite things? I just want to know.
Well, you sound like maybe you're a journaler too, or you have a desire to write a little bit more in the future. Let's see. Well, when I first started, it was a pen in composition book. Not composition book. It was like an artist's black book is what I used to write in. And then, oh gosh, I've written in spiral notebooks. I've done journaling on computers. You name it, I guess. I've even taken notes on things in my life on my iPhone. So I think, you know, what it comes down to is just write, right? I mean, and I know folks that write blogs, folks that write articles, folks that contribute and just writing a letter to the editor. Now it's posting a comment to somebody's, you know, blog on an article. Just writing is, I think, the key to getting better at writing, is just playing with language and playing with ideas and identifying and finding your voice and just going for it.
When you were that first year principal writing that first book, was it like 30 minutes a day you would write, or, you know, maybe it wasn't every day, every other day? What did that look like?
It was pretty much every day. I made it a routine to document my thinking and what was going on. And part of that was because I had a brand new baby girl at home. She had been born three weeks before school started. So I didn't want to go home and bring all my issues from work with me. So I would kind of use that last 10, 15, 20 minutes of school before I came home, and I would just jot some notes down about it. I would write down what I was frustrated about, what I was excited about, what was going on, so that I could leave it there and then go home, be dad, be husband. And then in the morning I could come back and start fresh.
No, thank you for, letting me ask some of those questions. Just find it super interesting. And I love the creative process and just hearing how people get into that. I find it absolutely fascinating. So again, I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely.
So now you got this other, you've gone on a sabbatical. You are doing conferences, keynote speeches, you're coaching, doing all sorts of workshops. Tell me the story of starting this type of business.
Well, this is it's another one of those things, Daniel, that just kind of happened in my life that I didn't have necessarily a goal to do this. I just wanted to be once I got my principalship, I wanted to be a good principal. And I had some success at that first school in Reno, and folks asked me to tell the story. So I went to a couple of different conferences and I presented, 60-minute sessions or 90-minute sessions or whatever about these are some of the things that we did at our school and this is how we turned it around and those kind of ideas. And it was really interesting because as I shared some of those stories and some of those settings, superintendents from different districts all across the country, in fact, some international, came up to me at the end of some of those sessions and said, hey, would you like to move to our city and come be a principal in our district? We'll take you right now. I'll sign you to a contract right now. And so when those kind of things were happening, I felt like it was valuable and it was valued that I was sharing the story. So kind of like writing. If you have a compelling idea and a voice that's worth listening to, write. Same thing for presenting. If you have a compelling idea and, again, a voice, and now you have to have kind of a presentation to go with it that actually captivates and engages folks and compels them to take some kind of action or to shift their thinking about something a little bit, then present, then speak, right? So it's been 12, 13 years now. I've done a lot of the conference presenting and then a little bit of workshops with schools and districts and leadership teams and whatnot on the side. While I was an active principal, I would take 4, 5, 6 days a year and do that. And I would work a little bit more during spring break and summer break and whatnot. And then right around 2014, the beginning part of 2014, there was an incredible demand for leadership professional development, for instructional coaching support, for the work around reflection, which I had written about a couple of different times already with Elisa Semerol. And so I was forced out of the principalship to go do this work because there was so much demand for the service. So I kind of, things just happened to work, confluence of the right events and the stars all lining up. I was able to step out of the principalship and come do this. And as of right now, I want to go back to the principalship at some point. I see myself going back at some point, but right now I'm so busy traveling and doing this work that I don't know when that's going to be, but I'm certainly enjoying it while it's lasting.
I'm curious, is there a similarity between choosing a winning idea for a book and I guess a winning idea in terms of core values and mission, vision, or direction of a school?
I think there is, and it comes back to focus. What are you focused on? You're going to get more of what you focus on. You're going to get better at whatever it is you're focusing on. So, as far as writing or presenting or leading in a staff, if you can compel folks and help folks to see clearly what this vision is and what this goal looks like, then you can kind of generate that focus and that momentum and that energy that leads you towards that place. So I would say, I think there's a lot of similarity there.
What would be one class that you think we should add to our schools that isn't currently taught that you know of?
That is a fabulous question. I think about that. I've actually thought about that quite a bit. There are two things. One is for teacher education. For future teachers coming into the profession, I think there needs to be some course added in trauma-informed instruction, trauma-informed classroom environments. There needs to be something out there because there is such a dramatic need for creating an environment that's safe for kids, in which we build relationships and we support students as they are. I don't think that there's enough in our teacher education programs to address that. So that's one. And then in schools, I think there should be a class. Maybe it's a middle school class. Maybe it's a high school class. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's an element. I don't know. I think it should be called E Pluribus Unum. And I think it needs to be bigger than just our city, our state, our country. It needs to be global. I think there's got to be a course that says, here's how you can be a human being on our planet and live and thrive together with all the other human beings that are on the planet. I think there just needs to be something in which we have a more global, more universal perspective about what life and harmony really should look like and what it could look like.
Yeah, so good. I was listening to a podcast today, and a guy was talking about leadership, and you know, somebody asked him a question about what skill he really wants to work on, whatever, to get the max out of his organization. It's actually the guy who created WordPress. A lot of our websites are built on it. But anyways, you know, the thing that he wants to work on is just human relationships, because really that's the key. You know, you could figure out systems, and those are important, and the mission, vision, value stuff, that's extremely important. There's all these different levers you can pull, and it's going to help you be more efficient and be a powerful organization. But at the end of the day, can you work with people well? Can you relate to them, encourage them? Can you get the most out of them? Another guy that I follow called Gary Vaynerchuk, and find him super inspiring. He talks about wanting to build a honey empire in his organization. And I'm very far from that, but it's something I'm extremely interested in. And it's just, how do you celebrate your folks, honor, you know, their great work, and build a place where people want to be a part of and to see it fulfill its mission, vision, values, and goals.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. And, you know, that idea of strengthening our ability to relate to other human beings and to build those relationships and whatnot, I think really the piece that I don't think we focus enough on is how to maintain a relationship with somebody when we have fundamental differences with them, whether it's a belief system or it's an approach, or we just look differently, or we come from different places, we believe in different religions, whatever it is, being able to build those relationships and maintain those. And if we have competing interests, I think it's important to be able to maintain those relationships and to understand each other, because that's where conflict comes from. And if we can kind of prepare folks that, hey, you're going to have differences with other folks and you're going to have competing interests, it's okay. And we can still coexist, and we can actually work to support each other in our ventures. I think those are truly important skills that we need to develop in every human being.
So I think diversity and that sort of stuff, I don't have a problem connecting people there, but you're triggering me a little bit, Pete, when you're talking about competing interests. And when I feel like someone's not valuing, you know, the direction I'm trying to move in, sometimes, you know, that just digs at insecurity, or you know, you start questioning, maybe is this idea even good enough or whatever it is. How did you deal with that as a building leader when you had diversity in opinion, right, regarding the direction of the school or whatever that was?
And I love that. I love the idea of having differences of opinion, because that's where growth happens. So we, you know, you celebrate different points of view. You want to make sure that every voice that wants or needs to be spoken is heard. And I think the piece that brings us all together is we can have differences of opinion of how we're going to get someplace, as long as we can agree to what we want to accomplish. And I think that fundamentally, as school leaders, the question that we have to ask is, what do we want our kids to be like when they leave? Because that's our ultimate goal, right? We're going to send kids away one way or another. They're either going to graduate, they're going to drop out, they're going to move. Well, what do we want them to be like? What skills do we want them to have? What are their dispositions? What are their attitudes about learning? What are the ways that they build relationships with others? And what is that going to look like? And if we can come to arrive at some kind of consensus as a school staff, student body, community, we can get to that place where we have the vision, we have the goal identified, and we're clear on that. Then the very constructive arguments that follow, I welcome those about how we're going to get there, right? Because all sorts of folks are going to have different ideas about the best way to teach kids this strategy or this skill, or what we need to do to make sure that the kids have the right kind of responsibility, or they've developed this work ethic, or they understand what grit is, whatever it is that we want to accomplish. I love the idea of letting folks just kind of wrestle with big ideas and play with big ideas, and then create plans to try to get there.
So in addition to The Principal Influence, Fostering Resilient Learners, and a number of other books that you've written, what would be one book every principal should read right now, and why?
Oh, besides those books? You mean besides the books that I've already mentioned? Here's my response to that, and I would take them outside of education, and I would say,
that's what I'm looking for, yeah. Pete. Yes.
Read something for fun. Read something that informs you, or that interests you, or something that just allows you to escape and use your mind a little bit differently. I think we get so focused on pushing professional books and professional reading on folks And I know as an active principal, I spent the majority of my reading time reading professional stuff, but I found that I was a much more healthy human being when I had the opportunity to read something else. So, you know, go read Sports Illustrated, read The Book Thief, whatever it is that gets you going, gets your blood pumping or gets you excited about something or makes you feel, you know, sad or excited or exhilarated, whatever it is, I say read something else. So if you don't have something, you don't know what to read, go try some stuff out and figure out what it is that you enjoy. And start with Stephen King. That's always fun as far as an escape is concerned.
There you go. What do you do for fun, Pete?
Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you, as a traveling man now, I'm on the road quite a bit. And so I love being home and being around my kids and making breakfast for my daughters before they go to school, just being around at dinner time, going to grocery shop and doing that kind of stuff. But as far as real fun, stuff that moves me, I a couple years ago got into triathlons somehow. And just just a couple months ago, this past summer, I finished my first Ironman.
No way. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I was doing a lot of running on the road. So I've been on some great runs in amazing places all across our country that I'm just thrilled to death to have been able to do that. And I would pick my hotels based on a place that had an exercise bike. So I have to stay in a place that has an exercise bike or has a lap pool so I can get some of those workouts in. Now that I've completed the Ironman, I'm not going to do it again. I'll still do some triathlons. I'll do some shorter ones, but I won't have to be quite so regimented in the hotels that I stay in. So that I have fun with that. That was fun. It was strenuous. It was one really, really long day in August, but it was well worth it. That feeling at the finish line is
can't beat it.
Yes, it is unsurpassable.
That's amazing. You know, I commend you on that. I've run two marathons. Was injured training for my third, so now I've pared it back, and I'm going to do a half marathon in Galveston this February.
Oh, that'll be nice.
The Ironman intrigues me though, Pete. You know, I'm scared of it because it's not only the full marathon, but then you got the bike and you got the swim.
Right.
But man, do I really want to do it. For the listeners, the key there. Listen, this guy is busy. He's traveling and doing all these conferences and, you know, keynotes and working with schools, and he still made a priority to work out. So what is your excuse, listener? You cannot be a completely healthy and fully, you know, realized person without taking care of yourself. And that's physically, that's spiritually, it's all of the above. And I know the listeners, they care about being their best as a leader. So professionally, you're... Hey, listeners, sorry about that. Just a little technical difficulties, but we're going to roll with the punches. So really the challenge, stay healthy and then also always adapt, be flexible as a leader. We lost the Skype connection, but we are back and finishing strong. Two more questions. Rock, paper, scissors. I'm collecting a ton of data with everybody I interview because one day we'll meet and I will defeat you in rock, paper, scissors. If you got to be honest, if we met, what would you throw first?
Okay. I'd go with paper.
Okay, good.
Paper first, just because I feel it would be all encompassing.
Yeah, I definitely have an unfair advantage collecting all this data, but
sure.
Appreciate you sharing it.
Remind me never to play you in rock, paper, scissors. We're going to do something totally different.
I'm coming with scissors. All right, so Pete, you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Oh, that's a terrific question. My dream school, my top three priorities. Well, here's the thing. I've been thinking a lot about structures of schools and structures of education and whatnot, and I'm not necessarily sold on the idea that we need to have schools the way that they're currently set up. I think we need to have clearly identified learning outcomes for young people, and what I'm saying is we need to be pretty clear on what citizenship looks like. And if we have a pretty clear idea of what citizenship looks like, then we can back that up and figure out what do we need to teach our kids along the way. So maybe it's not a school at all. Maybe it's a series of mentorships, a series of work experiences, a series of learning investigations that we're doing. So what we're going to need, my priority is going to be getting the right people to be able to do those things. So from village elders to experts in the field to masters who can take on apprenticeships, mentors, just folks that are willing to work with kids, to work with young people, to help usher them towards that place where they are productive, successful, happy, contributing citizens in a in the world, on our globe together.
Love it.
Did I kind of avoid the question, or did I address the question?
No, you answered it perfectly. There's no correct answer. So just love how people attack that problem. Pete, sure. Thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, first of all, I appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you so much. As far as parting words, let's see. I would say my personal motto that I follow as I live my life is always strive to be a better you. So I would say that to anybody that's listening, but to always strive to be a better you. No matter what you're doing, you can always do better. You can always be faster, stronger, more adept at change. You can be more, you have a better sense of humor. You can be more patient. All those things are things that we can work on and improve ourselves all the time. And if you need to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is @educationhall. You can email me, petehall@educationhall.com, or shoot, send me a text, 208-755-3139.
208-755, what was the last four there?
3139.
Got it. Guys, we'll have that all linked up for you also in the show notes. Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Pete. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Pete in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, including Pete's books, and the best way to connect. Pete, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
All right. Thanks so much.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.